every great beer is an even better story. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. Happy New Year and welcome back to another year of the Beer Healer Interviews. And as promised, we will be continuing with what we are calling the Pro, the Protege and the Hack. Once a month, I'll still be recording a podcast with my new mates, the Pro, Dave Padden from Akasha, and his protege, Ben Miller, who brews under the name From Ben. These episodes will focus on a specific topic of brewing that we will discuss in what we hope will be a fun, yet informative way. On this month's episode, we're going to have a chat about hops, and I've asked the boys to have a think about what kind of knowledge they can impart onto you, the listener. So here we go. Welcome to the Pro, Dave Padden.
G'day, Chris.
And the protege, Ben Miller.
Kia ora, mate.
Well, fellas, we made it back for our second episode in the series.
So that hate mail kind of been... It was, too much of it there.
It was all pretty positive.
Now, it all just got reverted straight to me, but I got thick skin, so.
Speaking of mail, hands up if you didn't receive sample cans from Ben. I've got my hand firmly in the fucking air.
Do you know what's hilarious is that that package is still sitting on my fucking doorstep.
Come on,
I've had to put it back in the fridge every night, and they still haven't picked it up a week later.
Jesus. I was going to say, at least you didn't leave it out in the Sydney hot weather, and it was about 50 degrees out your way, mate.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, we got close to it.
Have you two both got cans of Tino Pie?
I do.
I'm not sure I got any, actually.
Oh, no. Really? You two? He's hopeless,
unbelievable.
Isn't he?
He's fucking unbelievable. Jesus. Isn't that like we've got one tradition and you ruin it?
Well, as they say, if you can't be the one you love, love the one you're with. That's my can of filter haze.
All right, well, here we go. Here goes my self-loving tuna pie. Ah, smells good.
I'm on the water again, boys.
Still on there. Fair enough. We're not going to make fun of you.
Oh, well, it's getting fat dog, mate.
Hey there. Thanks for listening. I'll get you back to the podcast in just a sec. But first, I need a favour, please. There's a link in the show notes as well as on my Facebook page for a quick 2-minute survey. I just want to make sure that these podcasts are something that you, the listener, really want to hear. And the best way to do that is to find out a bit more about you with a survey. It's really quick. I just want to know a few things about you and where you live, as well as give you the chance to tell me what you like or don't like about the Beer Healer Interviews. All survey responses go into the drawer to win a mystery beer pack. Thanks for your help. Now back to the podcast. Now, have you both done your homework and extracted some witty anecdotes from those brewing brains of yours?
Little bits and pieces.
Small.
Yeah, sorry.
I hope that Ben can actually, you know, contribute a bit more tonight. He was a bit poor last time.
Is that the majority of the hate mail was directed?
I said it all got forwarded to me.
It was like you disagree with everything you said and that he just loves you so much he could never disagree with you.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that nice?
It's quite nice, actually. I've had one sip of beer and I'm feeling emotional already.
Please don't cry on us tonight. I'm very hot down here. It's 29 degrees down here in Hobart, so I could be just likely to self-combust at any moment. It's ridiculous.
Yes, you make sure you keep your hydration up, mate.
And I got my air conditioner going full pelt. Full pelt. All right, we digressed already. We've only just bloody started. So tonight we're going to talk about hops, those lovely little green flowers that we throw in at various stages of the brewing process. I think it's going to be a good one because I know you guys are both huge fans of the hops. But which one of you wants to go all Guardian Australia on us and tell us some sciencey shit about hops?
Well, I reckon Dave's the man for that.
I'm the man for that. Oh, how much do we want to talk about hops? We could talk about what they're made of for a while, but I think we'll do this nice and quick, Chris, because we've got much more exciting things to talk about. But hops, they're green. They grow on a vine, which is often like, whenever I tell somebody who doesn't know much about beer or hops or anything, I always say, "Oh, you meant a vine." No, I actually meant a vine. Yes, and they grow. So over winter, they die right down to rootstock, and then through spring and summer, they grow very, very quickly. So they're a vine, as I said before, and they grow. I think it's a clockwise direction. Is that right, Ben? Surely you know that one.
Around those strings.
Around those strings, yep. Nice and high into the air, and they grow incredibly quickly. a few years back when I was a home brewer, I used to grow them at home, and a good bonner will grow, you know, a good couple of centimetres a day when it's really getting into it.
It's crazy,
so,
isn't it?
They can go really high as you can get them. We had them going pretty high in the backyard, all the way up to the roof of the house, and I guess the bit that we like out of them is the actual hot flower itself, which you usually get some in your first year, and then a little bit like grapes, it takes a few years for these guys to kick in and get a good quality hop. To cut a long story short, inside of that hop are what we call the lupulin glands, which has all of the good stuff that we want to get out of it, the hop oils themselves.
Little yellow dust and everything all going on in there.
Yeah, pretty exciting.
And when you break them up and rub them together, you get that great smell on your hands.
Oh, it's beautiful. Nice, sticky, resiny oil. And that's the stuff that we get out of it. So essentially those hop cones are taken. Once a year you'll see breweries making their fresh hop beers. So they're literally taking those straight off the barn and using them in there, you know, through the brewing process and the boil and so forth.
It's when Hobart becomes the hot spot for brewers as they come down here and do the hop field tours with old mate Owen Johnston.
Not too far away now.
Yeah.
It's all coming up. So that's it. But what happens with most of them is they get taken off the bine and then dried and then they get sort of pulverized. And again, I'm using some pretty broad language here. I don't know the real details of it, but eventually end up in the sort of little rabbit pellets that most of us that use. Some of the local hops can be just dried and then used in their whole form as well. So you can actually get them, particularly Australian varieties and the New Zealand varieties, you can get them in the whole hop form, the whole cone form. But can
be messy too.
It's a bit hard sometimes. Yeah. I mean, certainly I wouldn't do it in our big system. It's a bit of a pain in the ass. But we can't do that with our American hops because they have to be pelletized to make it into the country.
And Benny, for those playing along at home, what part do hops play in terms of the brewing process?
Well, you can use hops for a whole number of things, especially home brewers. They experience with all sorts of levels of hops. So, yeah, what are they? First wort hopping, mash hopping. And I think the idea of – I've never done that myself personally, but the idea is sort of to try and change your bitterness a bit, I think. Obviously you use your hops from – anywhere from how bitter you want your beer, right through to if you want that juicy, hazy IPA like we see today, and you've got anywhere in between. You can use them for spice, you can use them for tropical pungent fruit, or even if you're just making a nice classic pilsner, you can just use like a Sars hop, which just gives you that nice sort of earthy, noble character. And
we'll get on some of those flavors, aromas, characters, all that sort of stuff soon. But, pretty much we chuck them into the boil or into the various stages. You got whirlpool, you got dry hop, you got the start of the boil, middle of the boil, end of the boil. What am I missing there, and which stage do you think is most important?
That's interesting, because that question, the answer now would be completely different to even my answer even just a year ago, I suppose. So I believe that no matter what you brew, you have to have, your bitter in charge. Of course. Sorry, my phone's just gone off. How rude. I've lost it.
Mate, you are on fire.
Is he even here?
Am I even here? No, well, that's just that was a proper distraction, that was. Anyway, so I don't even do 10, 15-minute hop additions anymore. Maybe if I went back to brewing like a classic West Coast IPA or something, I would, if I just wanted to go back to that original kind of, that process where that's the beer I wanted and that's the beer I got. I get most of what I want now out of my Whirlpool editions. Sometimes on a bigger scale it's a bit harder, but at home sometimes I experiment with cooling it down a little bit or heating it back up and just playing around with how that changes the kettle hop aroma. And then obviously with my hazies and stuff, the majority of that explosive flavor comes from the dry hop.
Yep.
So
not that long ago, and certainly when I was home brewing, and it was hops were all about the boil. There wasn't, there was a little bit of dry hopping, And I mean a little bit, right? I mean nothing compared to like we're doing today. Yeah. But certainly it was about I mean, hops are there for a number of reasons. I think the original reason, well, I don't think I know the original reason was for bitterness. And obviously the malt in our beer contributes a fair amount of sweetness, and the bitterness is there to really balance that out. In the old days, that bitterness was there for balance, and then as the American style pales and IPAs come on board, that bitterness really started to increase to kind of overtake that sweetness a little bit. So you have these big, dry, bold, bitter, wonderful IPAs. And so that was really, yeah, we used to always talk about where we're using it in the boil, right? So it'd be, you know, 60 minutes, we'd chuck in a whole bunch of hops to create just the bitterness, because what we're looking at is, and when I mentioned those oils at the start of this conversation, those oils need to be what we call isomerized. Those alpha acids need to be isomerized to give us that bitterness. And back in those days, 10 years ago, we were talking about, you know, 60 minutes hops was all about the bitterness, and all of those oils will be isomerized, or alpha acids will be isomerized into bitterness. Then we'd have some in the middle which would create flavor. Some would be isomerized and create bitterness, and some would stay there to, you know, and give us some of those tastes and aromas that we get when we, you know, when we smell the hop at the start. And then at the end of the boil, we'd add it in for aroma. And that was pretty much how we treated it. And maybe a little bit of dry hop to contribute to that aroma. And that was how we looked at it. And then everything has moved,
yeah,
I guess, across from, you know, we add a little tiny bit of hops at the start, but we're adding so much hops now in that, you know, in that whirlpool, in that end of boil, that small amount of bitterness that we get from all those hops is actually pretty, you know, all that we need. So we don't even need that 60-minute charge anymore.
It's amazing that one little flower can do everything from add bitterness or spice, flavor, add those awesome tropical aromas, give us some pungence, all just based on sciencey shit with the timing and the
that's an official term too, right? Sciencey shit.
That's the sciencey shit. Yeah, I'd say the timing and the temperature of the work.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think as I think, you know, Ben mentioned, we've moved from West Coast is all about that bitterness. So there's always that big 60-minute charge and so on. And even the West Coast, we've seen certainly when I started brewing, we're already starting to back off those bitterness hops a bit, just to let some of those, you know, the flavors and aromas come through a little bit better. But as we've now moved to hazies, just that bit, as I said before, the bitterness is back dried out, and all of these huge, wonderful flavors coming through. And there's so many hop varieties available now that have different characteristics. There's a complete palette available to you.
In chasing those hazy beers, have we forgotten about the heart of the hop, which is the bitterness?
In hazies, I think we're starting to get, I mean, this is what I see, this is just my opinion. I think we're seeing, we went right away from it. It's a bit like when West Coast IPAs first came out, it was all about the bitterness, and it went a little bit too far, and then we backed it off a bit. I think the hazies went the other way, went completely away from bitterness, where we were literally, you know, end of whirlpool, dry hop, you know, just completely zero bitterness, enough to, I guess, just to balance it out a little bit, not make it too sweet. But now I think we're seeing a little bit of bitterness creep back into the really good hazy IPAs.
I think that's really important too, the bitterness, because like Dave said, like I've brewed beers, you know, where I haven't added a hop in the whole thing until it's been at like 70 degrees, where what is the temperature? I can't remember what the...
That's pretty much whirlpool, isn't it, stage?
Well, I suppose so. But, yeah, but you think about it, like you've got a lot of mass there. So most whirlpool hops, you're still going in like mid-90s. You are still, you know...
You're pretty close to boil. It's about, yeah.
Yeah, you'd never be able to drop down. I mean, maybe what if you transfer out of the kettle into whirlpool, Dave, you might drop, you know, with that cold stainless, but because of the mass there, I'd say you'd probably only lose 5 degrees. So you're still extracting
And that's only your first brew as well, because, you know, in a brewery like ours, we're putting through, you know, up to 4 brews a day. Certainly the number 2 to number 4 are already warmed up anyway.
What's the stage called where I'm adding in about 75 degrees? What's that one called? Is that still a whirlpool?
Well, it'd be like a hop stand, I suppose.
It's still
technically a whirlpool. Like you would still, so with what I was saying, like nothing would change. The only difference is because obviously mine's smaller, is I'd run it through the chiller a bit to try and cool it down. But the fast forwarding to when that's a finished beer, I did everything the same. I still did 3 dry hops. I still did everything exactly the same. But the beer was just missing something. They just fell short. They just, They didn't have that flavor didn't dance around in your tongue for very long. They sort of,
because you didn't have that 75 degree addition or thereabouts.
No. Because there was no bitterness there. So that's what I'm saying. Because I cooled the wort down and added the hops. There was no isomerized hops in there really at all.
Yep.
And the beer was just crap, to be honest with you. Okay. They just weren't good. So I've gone now with all my hazies. I make sure that I do about 5 IBUs of a bittering charge. That's it. Just 5 IBUs at the start. Mm-hmm. Because I've also done the other way. I just find that. That really, really sets the beer off, and it helps carry that flavor through. So it leaves your palate wanting more.
Yep.
It doesn't just, you don't just drink it and you have this explosive flavor and it disappears. It really helps carry it on. It's like this very subtle lingering bitterness. I'm not talking 80 IBUs worth. No. I'm talking, 20 or 30, something that's just, but also as well that, like Dave was mentioning before, the malt sweetness to balance it. Obviously, as the alcohol goes up in the beer, and with hazies, I try and increase my final gravity as well, because that gives you better body mouthfeel, that sort of stuff. So the bitterness does slightly creep up. So you'll go up, you'll move up with that body, with that alcohol, with all that stuff. But yeah, without it, they fall short. They're not impressive. They don't keep you coming back for more. And that was a really big thing, because like you said, we just went, all right, let's go zero bitterness. And what you found out is that all these amazing American beers actually did have bitterness in them, but because they had such a heavy mouthfeel, really rich, juicy, like silky mouthfeel, it masked a lot of that bitterness, but you still need it there for that beer to work, for that beer to dance together, for that beer to, to be exactly what you want it.
So what are your key pieces of advice for home brewers looking to brew a hazy then? Start off with a early charge of 5 bitterness units, but aim to get what, in the 20s?
Yeah, I would. Again, that just depends on, so like for a pale ale, I think Tinapai, it's 5.5%. I think the IBU, I don't even write the IBU on Untappd or anything, but I think that comes in at about 20 something. Yep. It's not a lot, but it's there. But see, the other, then you've got the other scale of hopping, and dry hop contributes to a lot more bitterness than what people realize. And Dave and myself have discovered this quite a lot recently, because the more study you do, right, there's all of these studies encouraging, like day 2 dry hops and stuff. But see, I don't know exactly what it is, but I know that beta acids contribute to bitterness in dry hops. And also if you use older hops, the oxidized beta acids contribute even more to bitterness as well. And that. I've done a test on that, because I think it was a study by Scott Janish. It wasn't a very big one. It was only about one page. But I did that. I brewed the exact same hazy, and I dry hopped one with it was like 2-year-old Eldorado or something like that, and I dry hopped one with the fresh one. And sure enough, it was more bitter. It wasn't crazy, but it was definitely more bitter. But also there's the biotransformation aspect of it too. And look, we haven't nailed this yet. We're getting pretty close, but we've had beers that, for whatever reason, the yeast is exactly the same beer, but you might use a different yeast in your dry hop at the same time. Now one comes out with this horrific, I don't know, Dave, what do we explain it as? Like a green hop. It's like chewing on a hot pellet almost.
We call it hot burn. So it's kind of this real back of the palate bitterness, which is pretty common in hazies, and something, that takes a lot of work to get rid of. And I think and we've certainly identified that where you dry hop, and because we're using such big dry hop charges, again, probably not as much as we were when we first started, but still a lot bigger than a West Coast, you've got some people dry hopping literally when it goes into the fermenter through to maybe starting at day 2, day 1. Some are even starting all the way, like a West Coast, towards the end of ferment. But where you do start your dry hopping does have a big impact on that hop burn.
Because that used to be the belief was that that the dry hopping didn't add any kind of bitterness. But obviously, as you say now,
it's a different kind of bitterness. Yeah, absolutely.
It's very different. And that's kind of because a lot of people are like, oh, well, it's not bitterness. It's just like chewing on a hot pellet. It's like, when you chew on a hot pellet.
Someone would have done that to you, Chris, for sure. When you first started brewing, said, oh,
chew a hot pellet.
Chewing on a hot pellet. It's great.
Yeah, no, it was disgusting.
Everybody's done it.
I had a real keen mate once. He grabbed a whole handful of them. He was like, I'll be right. I love bitter stuff. And I was like, no. I was laughing. I was having a joke. Don't do it. It would be horrible. He's like, nah, it's all right. And he would have put like 20 grams of hops in his mouth, started chewing it up. For the rest of the night, he was like sipping on water and like almost needed to give him a toothbrush to scrub his tongue.
Oh, no. Hey, being that hops are an agricultural product, and we're talking a bit about it here now, that there are so many different things that can change about them. Can you find that sometimes can be a challenge? You think you're going to get one thing out of it and it appears to give you another sort of characteristic?
Oh, that's a good question. I think there's a number of things that affect. I mean, again, you are a bit like yeast. You're sort of at the mercy of yeast, but with hops, you are at mercy with the environment as well. We get a lot of good information from, particularly here in Australia, from the growers, of a whole lot of characteristics of the hops, so that we can counteract any changes. You know, alpha acid is a very common measure for the bitterness, and we're looking more at beta acids now in terms of aroma and taste as well. So you get all this sort of data from the hop provider. Similar, no different to the way that we look at malt and the different characteristics of malt and the extract that we're going to get from it. So we get a pretty good view of what it's going to be like, but it really nothing does compare to getting, you know, those new hops into your hand, rubbing them together and have a good old smell. But we, you know, I deal predominantly with American hops, and from farm to farm, some hop varieties will differ dramatically. And I think, you know, something like Simcoe from year to year can differ dramatically, but can also differ farm to farm. So some of it can be really, really shit.
Hey mate, I don't want to sound like a wanker here, but I think you're referring to the term of terroir.
That's a different one. Terroir is terroir.
Terroir.
I feel like you've got a glass of wine. I was going to say in your hand, but really only your two fucking pincers and your pinkies.
This is repeating on there. This is.
But I
still don't fucking know what that means either.
But when you're talking about terroir, so, you know, we use a lot of Cascade in the brew, both Australian Cascade and American Cascade, and they're two very, very different hops.
You can tell the difference?
Oh, 100%. Very, you know, the plant itself is essentially the same, or at least the same lineage, and it planted in New Zealand, planted in Tasmania, or planted it in, in America, they're very different hops. So yeah, absolutely, they're very different, and not a better or worse. They're just different, and it's the same. No different to a Shiraz grape that's grown in the Hunter Valley or down in the Clare Valley. They're two very different wines from essentially the same plant.
Along those same lines, have either of you ever brewed with a hop that might have been a different batch, same hop, different batch, but got completely different results?
Simcoe.
How's going?
Yeah, I fucking love and hate that hop so much.
Fuck it. What are you? You just make all your beers out of Simcoe and Mosaic, don't you?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. You're a hazy brewer, so you'd be Mosaic, Citra, and Galaxy exclusively, right? Isn't that what all?
No. I'm just really, really expensive brewaka. Remember?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. What is that, twice the price of all the other hops?
But I think
I haven't personally had too much of an experience with that, other than just the age of hops, like I was saying before. Yep. But see, for me, especially because I'm not on the scale that Dave's on, it's quite hard for me to notice differences like that, because I'm not producing, 5,000 litres of the same beer every week, you know, and then 5,000 beers of another same beer, in that, you know, all in the same week. So you're going to notice that difference batch to batch. You could do potentially if you have the different hops. So, yeah, for me personally, I can't say I have noticed that. I can notice a smell in them, but I've never had that personal shit. This batch is heaps different to the other one, you know?
Yeah, we get it with Simcoe every year. It's getting better and better. I remember when we were getting Simcoe, 8-9 years ago, it was pretty shit. It wasn't very particularly. What's that? What
are you doing? I just cracked something in the middle of his speech here, mate.
Jealous. How fucking rude of me.
I'm just asking what it is.
it's tin of pie again, mate. I grabbed two cans of it.
God, you're like a broken record. So Simcoe 8 years ago wasn't very good quality. Open up the bag and it smells like a bag of cat piss. And then as we saw, you know, the year after, all of a sudden, you know, it's those beautiful, you know, fruit salad aromas that we expect out of that hop. So that one for me, I think. There's also some hops that differ, for me anyway, across the, obviously we harvest hops once a year. And they will differ between the when you first. So we've got our American hops that are literally arriving in the next couple of weeks. The new crop from last year, which we're very excited about. So yeah, we get very excited. We have our our first batch of Corbin is done with the as soon as the hops arrive in the brewery. The next day we brew our first batch of Corbin for the year with the fresh hops, and it's just amazing. But it's important. You know, we can talk about freshness and how to keep hops and all that later on. But I think some hops differ greatly from the time you get them, and then you're using those same hops for a year until the next crop comes along. Some hops survive that quite well, so like hops like Mosaic, Galaxy, all very, very well packaged and don't change much across the year. Something like Cascade, US Cascade, we find changes a lot. It moves from that real sort of piney and sort of really classic Cascade flavors and aromas to a real floral type aroma we get towards the end of vintage. It really does change over those 12 months. So again, it depends what hop it is, but lots of things change. And it's just a matter of every time you're using them to, you know, get your nose in there, have a smell, and maybe, and you do lose some of those alpha acids over time, so maybe you do need to add a little bit more as you move towards the end of that year as well.
Yeah, it sounds like hops can be a bit of a game of chance sometimes, but I guess you guys know so much about their makeup and you measure everything. But having said that, have you ever messed up a hop addition by thinking that you're putting in, you know, say 10 grams or whatever the hell it is, and you've done exactly that and then got a wildly different result? And you just cannot explain why?
Ben, you do that all the time, wouldn't you?
Oh, it's pretty much everyone in my beers, I think.
Can it be a blessing and a curse?
Honestly, I don't think I have. I'm really controlled with that stuff. So, like, you know, again, sort of boils down
really
to...
That's really fucking boring, mate.
I know. Sorry. Process, man. Nail that shit down. Nail that shit down and you know what you're doing, you know?
I've certainly done it.
Yeah, well, of course you have.
You tell us something interesting then, Dave, because Ben's just fucking bored me to shit.
I'm just fucking hopeless.
You just sip on that Tino pie, mate. I'll look after this one.
You know what I'll do is I'll just open Scott Janisch's book so I can have something interesting to tell you guys.
Well, you got nothing yourself. It would have to be about 7 years ago, 7 8 years ago. I used to work for another brewery that some of you may know, and making a hoppy red ale, was around 6.5% beer, and we back then, as I said, this was like a West Coast style beer, West Coast sort of for red IPA. Even back then, it was we weren't hopping it too much, but anyway, we had
hang on Dave, it's you we're talking about. You definitely hopped it too much.
I certainly for the time I was definitely
for the time
more,
bro, everyone would have been like Jesus Christ.
But anyway, we had a couple of brewers working there, and one brewer dry hopped one day, forgot to write it on the log. And another guy came in a day later and goes, forgot to dry hop, I better do it. Anyway, we realized that after a few days that we literally just doubled the dry hop. At that point, sort of thought, shit, I hope this is okay. I hope, Christ, imagine throwing that much hops at a beer. I wonder what it's like. And we transferred to Bright about a week and a half later, and tasted the beer with much trepidation. And it was fucking amazing. It was amazing. And it's funny, you can talk about there's an argument of what we call diminishing returns. Is it gets to a point where it wasn't like it tasted like there was double the dry hops in it. It just had just taken it to another level. And in fact, we changed the recipe of the beer. I think it was halfway in between. So we added 50% dry hop because it really was fucking great. And I guess a good example of when, fuck ups are a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, did absolutely.
Is that when you started double dry hopping after that, or did you already do that before?
I was just thinking that story when you were telling your shit one before, and that thought came to mind. I can't remember if that was the time we started to move to double dry hop. And there was a couple of reasons for double dry hopping, but one is just to make obviously, I still dry hop today, the traditional way of opening up. We've got some really nice hop ports on our fermenters, but literally pouring them in the top of the fermenter and letting them go through gradually. We don't recirculate anything like that. So by double dry hopping, it really just sort of spreads it out a little bit too, and we just get a little bit more extraction out of the hops as well. But Yeah, by when you are dry hopping hard, by dumping it all in one go, we certainly don't get the extraction we do out of splitting it into two or three dry hops.
So you guys obviously have done a fair bit of this shit. Do you have a killer combo for hops that you seem to always come back to when you're writing recipes?
Oh, I know yours,
mate. I mean, what's mine?
I was going to say Mosaic Galaxy Citra just to be an asshole.
Yeah, I've got this Mosaic Galaxy and Citra. Yes, mate. Nah, I tell you what, I don't have a specific hop combo that I always come back to, but it always follows along the same path is that if I'm doing something that's massively fruit forward, you know, whether it be mango or stone fruit or anything like that, I always love to throw in a little bit of spice in there. So like Centennial, okay. I love Centennial. Yeah. Centennial, what I do is I'll throw it in the kettle and then the first dry hop and then I'll get rid of it. So it just floats around in the background. You can just sort of tell it just adds another dimension of flavor to a beer that otherwise would just be a fruit bomb.
Attention you know what to I mean? Detail, guy.
And if you're not, but if you're not looking for it, you might not see it, or you might not taste it, I love just throwing that little bit in there and it really sets the beer off. I just think it just takes it to another dimension. It's important to do, I think, in my opinion, but that's what's kind of good about beer is everyone's different. And that's my little thing, you know, but I find that especially works well in big, 9% hazies, 9% beers. The big ones.
I'm a big fan of Centennial as well. I still use quite a lot of it. Use a lot of it as a home brewer. We even do a single hop as well every now and then, which is different and interesting. I think
single hop Centennial.
Yeah, it's an interesting beer.
It's so good. Yeah. That is such a good beer.
It's like nothing else. It really is quite unique. And I think. But Centennial, I call it the filler hop. I think it's like Ben said, whether it's West Coast, whether it's whatever, it just particularly when you're using some of the bigger, mosaics and Amarillos and things like that, I think Centennial kind of just gives you that little bit of fill. Some of them can be a little bit one-dimensional, and it really does sort of bulk out that flavor profile a little bit. I love doing that. So, I love West Coast. I'm all about I guess they're old school now, the Mosaics, the Simcoes, the Amarillos, the Citras, all those almost classic hops. I don't think you can go wrong. And I think you can take some of those combos. It might be one of them, might be two of them, might be four of them, might be three of them. You change the ratio of those hops, it can make very different beers.
That was going to be my next question. Have you guys ever drunk another brewer's beer that used used your killer combo and maybe in a different ratio to what you use it, and then you thought, nah, that's better than mine?
No, but if anyone wants to have a go at one of my recipes and send me their beer, bring it on. I'll send them. That'll be a fun challenge, actually. I don't think anyone's ever brewed one of my beers or it's kind of weird for me because I think I said in the last podcast, I never really brewed a clone or you know what I mean? I never did beers like that. It was like, if I'm going to make a beer, I'm just going to do it from scratch. So, if someone wants to try and brew one of my recipes and send me a sample, bring it on.
What about you, Dave? I think he's calling you more simple than him.
That's quite funny. So,
fuck, truth hurts, eh?
I have been giving him heaps, and it wasn't really a lot of the hazies, particularly out of the States, are using that combo of those classic. What are big? Oh, I've got to stop using that word classic. It's starting to get a bit boring. But,
yeah, you are. You're classic. You're a classic person.
I'm old. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
But some of that Mosaic Galaxy, Citra, Eldorado hops just go so well in a hazy beer. But I've found that, I've had so many beers with those hops in them, and some of them can be completely different depending on how they've, where they've hopped it, how much of the hops they've used. And just by throwing in something a little bit different can then, you've got, I had a beer from, who was it? Alvarado Street. Last year.
Don't even get me started.
Which was, settle down, boys. But it had Eldorado, had Citra maybe, but it had, that was where I discovered Azarka hops. That was the first time I'd drunk a Zarka hops, and it completely blew my mind. It was a completely different beer. I mean, two thirds of it was the same as every other bloody hazy, but by adding in just that hop, it was fucking amazing. I can still taste it now.
I've used a Zarka on commercial actually. That one I did for Bucket Boys ages ago, but the hops were not boiled in their tanks. This is Jonathan Heppner's longest name ever. Anyway, but we used, I think it was Idaho 7, Azaka and Citra. I think from memory. That's a hop that I need to use more of, because that first run of that beer was banging, but I haven't used it again ever since, because it's just, it's a problem nowadays is there's so much new stuff coming in. You're like, wow, I want to try that. And at the end of the day, we've got to go to work every day, so I don't have time to brew all these beers. But, yeah, Azaka, how do you say it, Dave? Azaka.
I don't know. Like a car show.
Azaka. Akasha. No, hang on. How did you say Akasha with your first?
Akasha.
No, it was like, oh, God, what was it, Dave?
Akasha.
What are you talking about?
Remember when the beer healer reviewed, what did he review? Freshwater when I worked there.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, this, I can't remember, but we paused the video and like had to stop laughing.
Fuck all of you. I did my best, you bastard.
It was a good, I mean, in Tassie, I suppose. Yeah. Tassie.
We have our own way of speaking down here. I now know it's a car shop. Like, a car shop. I'm posh.
Yeah,
oh, that's Japanese.
That's like me. Yeah.
Hey, when you guys get together as brewers, and not just you two, like with your other brewing mates and stuff, do you discuss hops in detail, or do you let little secrets go about the hops you've used recently in whatever beer and stuff like that?
I'm often accused of being very open. So I think it's worth saying that, you know, everything that we've spoken about today is our opinion, and we certainly don't know, and I don't think either of us would claim to be, you know, a master of hops. We're certainly, I mean, we spend a lot of time, the two of us, literally messing each other about what we've learnt, you know, today about hops, and, you know, and what we didn't know yesterday. And there's still so much for us to learn, and there's people out there with a lot more knowledge than us, but I guess that's the beauty of it. I don't think any of us are ever going to be, you know everything about them.
That's actually what I thought was someone like Dave and I, like we'll literally, if we find something new, it'll be, have you seen this? Check this shit out. Or, hey, I did this with the beer. And I suppose for me, because I'm playing around heaps at home with smaller batches of stuff that, you know, poor old Dave up there on his laptop can't do. So
I'm wearing my shirt that says brew on it today. I don't know how much of a brewer I really am, Chris, but these days, Ben is right. I sit in front of the computer for a lot of those hours, but I am wearing a shirt that says brew on it today. So fuck you.
Well, fucking
walks like a duck and quacks like a duck.
Yeah, like a duck. But for me, I don't know. I don't understand. Sometimes, look, if you've spent a lot of time researching something yourself, you know, and the purpose of that is to better your brand or your beer or something, then I can definitely understand why some people might be a bit protective of it, because it's hard work, right? You know, there are a lot of people out there that are more than happy to just ask someone how to do something rather than go out and do it themselves, you know. And while that's okay and offering help's good and all that sort of stuff, I always find, me personally, I don't learn stuff properly unless I actually do it myself. Somebody could tell me how to brew a beer or tell me how to do this, but unless I'm going to go out and experience that myself, I don't feel like I've learned anything, if that makes sense. So, but as far as general knowledge goes, I'm an open book for everyone, you know what I mean? It's just, if someone's got a question, ask me. I get people message me all day, and by the end of it, they're like, "Oh God, I hope I haven't bothered you too much." And I'm like, "No, man. Like I was in your shoes."
If there's anyone in this world who doesn't mind a chat, I reckon it's you, brother.
Fucking oath, mate. Fucking oath.
Speaking of offering advice to the homebrew crowd and all that sort of thing, let's get to the educational part of this. When a homebrewer needs to store or handle hops, what should they be doing?
Oh, that's fuck. That's like.
Can I answer this one?
Yeah,
you go for it.
Is that all right? Because this is something I'm quite passionate about. I think that you could even take it back a few steps, I reckon, because as a home brewer, you've really got to find the right place to buy, and this is all your ingredients, right? But hops just degrade so quickly and so easily that you really want to know where they came from. You really want to know how the person you bought those hops from, how they stored them, how they packaged them, because they don't, the homebrew store doesn't buy them in little 100 gram packs. They're buying them in probably big packs like we are and repackaging them or whatever. So it's really important to understand where they've been and how many hands they've been through and how they've been stored in between, how they were stored before you got them. So before you even get the hops, there's so much work that really, if you're serious about using good hops, because the freshness of the hops really makes a massive difference to your beer.
Do you know what's interesting about you say that, Dave, is, you know, quite truthfully, until I started working in commercial brewing, I did not know what hops smelled like. And that's a weird thing to say.
No, it's fair. It's fair.
All the hops that are, and truly, like I, you know, even this year, even just last year's hops or this year's hops, sorry, I'm talking a few years ago, I'd get the freshest hops I could and I'd go, oh, they smell amazing. These are beautiful. And I'll brew beers. And until I started working in a commercial brewery and I was opening, you know, 5 kilo bags of the current year's Galaxy or something like that, or even, you know, a hop that I'd used heaps of, like Simcoe or Mosaic, as every home brewer does, you know, like all the big ones, I had no idea what those hops actually smelt like, you know, after 3 or 4 years or 3 years or whatever it was of using them on a homebrew level. When I went to commercial brewing, I just went, holy shit, you know.
That's amazing. Like,
wow, is that what us as homebrewers are facing, you know? And it's not cheap on that level either, and that's the problem. So like Dave said, it is really, really important that you have a good supplier who looks after their hops, you know, doesn't leave
always,
them
in a, always important to have a good supplier.
What are you talking about?
Sound like Snoop Dogg.
it's really important, you know, and there's a lot of steps that those bigger guys that are repackaging can take, as in the homebrew stores. Most of them do these days, but, you know, I've seen some interesting things. Yeah,
you can tell when you open up that bag. I mean, it's the smell, yeah. It's the look, you know. Sometimes you can open a bag of hops and there's no smell, they're kind of green, kind of not. They kind of look like a lawn that's, you know, a Sydney lawn, you know, now.
No, that'd be brown. That'd be a good lamb.
I've seen some hops that are not too green, let me tell you. So I think that's really important. And then obviously once you do have them, keep them as cold as you can.
Yeah.
And when you, if you're opening a bag and not using them all,
get your food, best solution,
chuck the whole fucking lot in. But otherwise, yeah, if you can get as much air as you can out of that bag, reseal it, get it back in the fridge or the freezer, then that's the ideal situation.
If you're anal enough, you can purge your bag of CO2 and then close it up. But like, if you open up a bag of hops and it smells like onions or isovaleric acid, like cheese, fucking don't use them. don't go, this mosaic's a different version of Mosaic, and it's the cheese. It's the nice cheddar cheese version of it. No, that's isovaleric acid. You don't fucking want that.
But, unless you bring a lambic, of course.
Well, yeah, but even then, you just want aged hops. I don't think you want cheesy hops there, do you? I don't know.
They're pretty cheesy.
Leave them out on a windowsill for 4 years.
They're a little bit cheesy.
Fucking cheesy, aren't
you? Every day's a school day here. So from each of you, I want one thing a brewer should always do with hops and one thing they should never do with them.
Okay.
What do you got to say, Dave?
I got lots to say, but you only said I'm allowed one, so yeah, you know, it's it makes it a little bit difficult. Look, I think one thing I've always found with dealing with homebrewers is they're afraid to dry hop with a lot of hops. You know, sometimes it feels like, really, should I be adding this much dry hop? Yeah, should be a dry hop. Yeah, come and have a look at how much we put in a dry hop. It's frightening when you know, kilos and kilos and kilos of hop. So, I think one thing that I think they need to do is use enough hop. We can talk about the freshness like we did before, but use enough of them. If you're going to be brewing a West Coast or even more so an East Coast or hazy IPA, you've got to use a lot of hops in the dry hop, and some brewers are just afraid to do it. So don't be afraid would be my one thing. What don't do, don't use old hops.
Did you steal your one, Ben?
That's like, that's all I got. It's, they smell like cheese. Don't fucking use them.
Because, you know, look, you know, hops, you know, yes, they're expensive, but when you're home brewing, you're talking about hundreds of grams. Don't go and brew a shit beer just for the sake of using, you know, 2017 or 2018 hops instead of 2019 because you had them left in your freezer or they were half the price.
Yeah, fair
use
enough.
Fresh hops. Don't use old ones.
Benny?
Know what you're using. I reckon sniff, you know, the old rub them into your palm of your hand and really smell them and understand what you're doing with that hop is my big thing. Yep. Not, don't just go, this is a popular hop, so I'm going to use it. That just because it's popular doesn't mean it's going to work in the beer that you're doing. Yeah, you know? Like, or the, so, but you really, I do it with every hop I ever use. I always, you know, if I get some fresh hops, even if I've used them hundreds of times, I always rub them into the palm of my hand and smell them. It's just good to appreciate what they've got. While that obviously doesn't translate, you know, it doesn't mirror exactly what you're going to get in the beer, it gives you an idea of it. But before I use any new hop variety ever, or even ones that I've used before, I go back and I study the profile again just to make sure that that is what I'm doing. You know what I mean? That's gonna work with the malt bill I've put together or the beer that I'm after, or, you know, what I'm telling people this beer is going to be. It's just important to know what you're using rather than just using it because it's popular.
Yep. And one thing never to do.
Yeah, if your hops smell like cheese, don't use it. <Well done.
laughs> In wrapping this thing up, you guys play with these little fuckers every single day. Do you ever get tired of the
– What was that?
You play with these little bastards every day, these little hops. Do you ever get tired of the repetitive –
Not play with the hops. Yeah.
Do you ever get – let me ask my fucking question. Do you ever – get tired of the repetitiveness of, you know, putting 1 kilo of this and 1 kilo of that? Does it get boring?
That's more of a question for Dave, because for me, again, at home, I have heaps of fun all the time. And if I was going to be a commercial brewer or a production brewer, then that would be, yeah, that's a Dave question, that one for sure.
Kind of, because I haven't opened a hop bag in about 2 years, but it's
just a big shot.
I've done the hard yards, fellas. Get down here and bring me some
praise. Come over here, put these fucking hops in. Yeah, the back saw.
Listen here, old Dave will sort you out.
Oh, geez. Jesus. that's great thing to end on. No, absolutely not. I think it's one of those things where every time I open a hop bag, you know, I can't help but, you know, not stick my nose too far in, but yeah, get in there, have a good smell. I just find myself doing it all the time, and I love the flavors. And as Ben said, I love getting in there, watching. You know, I said it before, the hops change over the year. I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing either. It's a really interesting thing to watch. So we're not brewing one beer over and over again. We're brewing, even our core range is relatively varied. So we're dealing with a lot of different hops, and where, you know, I don't get bored of it at all. Otherwise, we're in the wrong profession.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one final question. So in the last 20-odd years or whatever it's been, you know, the way we've used hops has changed. Once upon a time, it used to be all about, you know, prior to Ringwood and the bitterness, and then you had flavour, you had aroma, now it's sort of about juice. What are you and your brewer mates calling out for next?
Oh, fuck. That's
back
hard.
To bitterness. Back to West Coast.
Yeah. I reckon West Coast are going to come back.
Yeah.
Or you might even end up seeing. I've done a few of them, and they're quite fun to do. It's like a juicy West Coast IPA.
I think you're exactly right, Ben. I think it's somewhere in between. I think what we're seeing is you know. Last year or the year before last, we're saying, oh, yeah, hazies are here. Is it a flash in the pan? Is it another fucking brood? Is it going to go away? It's not going anywhere. There's people, and people are still adoring these beers. But I think we're just seeing it now hopefully level out as just another type of IPA, which is fucking unreal, right? So it's not replacing West Coast. It's not saying, we've got just as much demand in our brewery for, you know, Hopsmith and Corbett, and all those beers are still killing it out there. But, you know, it just gives us another sort of feather in our bow and another beer to brew, which just makes it even more interesting. So the next new thing for hops, I just think, I think we'll see things come back a little bit. I mentioned it with West Coast when West Coast was were in the first few years, they were going hard on the bitterness and probably a little bit too hard, and then they softened out a little bit. I think we're seeing the same with the Hazies, come back to bitterness a little bit. And we're going to see that maybe that whole sort of spectrum of IPAs will just be called IPAs again. And anywhere along from a West Coast to a, you know, to a pure hazy or anywhere in between is just a fucking IPA. So I think, and we're seeing a lot in the US now. I know, one of our brewers, George, just came back from the States a few weeks ago, and they're just called IPAs now. They're not all called hazy IPA or West Coast IPA. It's just an IPA. It might be cloudy, it might be clear, it might be bitter, it might not be bitter, it might be somewhere in between, but. Who cares? It's what it is. It's the XYZ beer. Yeah, just drink the fucking thing. Enjoy it. If you don't, move on to something else.
It's all right.
Yeah, I think that's actually interesting though, because I know a lot of people do steer away from the hazy or the New England, and they just call it an IPA because they just go, oh, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, because a lot of people are like, ah, this isn't a New England IPA or whatever. But I guess that's progression of it, right? It's always going to – the more people do that. But, yeah, actually, you know what, when I was in America, they all just are just IPAs.
Hey, speaking of going to America, I want to share this news with you because it's pretty fucking exciting. 21, I'm off to the States with the family. We're doing a bit of a combo trip with another couple of families, and I think I might have convinced my wife to go and spend a few days in Bend, Oregon. How good will that be?
I've been to Bend. Bend is fucking awesome. Yeah. Mate, it's beautiful.
I'm trying to convince her.
We did a whole month, Janice and I, around sort of from San Francisco up through to Portland, Oregon, and then we went over the Mount Hood, I think it is, to Bend, spent a couple of days there, had a look around, went to Ale Apothecary, Deschutes, did all of that, went to Boneyard Brewing. It was awesome. Bend's got good food. It's a great spot. Mate, Oregon is amazing.
Yeah,
don't you hate it when someone one-ups you, Chris?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I'm going to spend 2 or 3 days in the place, but you've spent fucking months traveling.
I can one up you again if you like. I'm going next week.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Fucking bastard.
You're not going
to Bend, are you?
No, I'm not going to Bend. I'm going to the States. This
is our story, mate. We're Bend only people here, mate.
Canada or I'm going to the States.
Where are you going, Dave? I'm interested.
I'm just a short trip going to Calgary for a few days, and we have a nice new canning line, and we're just going to spend a few days with the manufacturers to figure out how to use the fucking thing.
Yep.
And heading over to East Coast to spend a couple of days in Vermont.
Ooh,
awesome. I'm jealous now.
Yeah. And in particular, spending a couple of days with a brewery. You might have heard of a beer called the Heady Topper. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I drank that when I was in New York.
So we're lucky enough to have the same canning line as those guys. So we're going to spend some time with them getting some tips and tricks. And
are you going to do a collaboration brew while you're there or organise one?
Probably should.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, wasted opportunity, wouldn't they?
They wouldn't know who I am, mate. I'm not sure how keen they would be. But
I
know who they are.
Heady Topper with also special guest Akasha.
Hey, Chris, I'm doing a collaboration brew with Lanikai when I go to Hawaii. So there you go.
Are you seriously?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Oh, you beauty! I was only talking to Steve this week. Yeah,
I know. Steve makes me nervous when I talk
legend.
To him. Jeez,
I was only talking to him this week. He's put me on to another guest for another podcast. Mitch out of Michigan.
Awesome.
Doing wild ales as well. So that's my next guest if everything all works out well. So
very good.
Steve's awesome.
We've got that sorted out.
I could just sit there and listen to him talk and look into those big brown eyes of his for hours while I drank his Halpea coconut porter.
Man,
I had to drink. We went and had a taster with him down at Bucker Boys, and I had to drag Janice out of there. I was like, hey, you're marrying me, remember? Me.
Nice. Well, on that note, I reckon we wrap this one up. It's been great chatting about hops. Probably not your traditional educational lesson on hops, but it's been awesome nonetheless getting your guys' thoughts, mostly yours, Dave, on how awesome hops are. So thanks to Ben for not sending me any beer. Dave for still not sending me any beer, and
you should rename the podcast The Pro, The Listener, and The Hack.
Yours is quality, not quantity.
Yeah, true.
Fair enough. Well, Dave's gone very silent, so he's either his microphone is broken, probably not a bad thing. Or
I've already moved on. Sorry, guys. I thought we'd finished.
All right, boys. Thanks for your time tonight. And as always,
awesome.
Cheers to great beers.
Cheers, mate.
Gentlemen, goodbye.
Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?